gripes about it, but yeah, it's whatever. I mean, it's hard not to get excited and start cussing when you're talking about our boy Roshan going to John's Bears, which is, if John, it's so funny how this played out because, dude, we have been on his jock for weeks. Oh, then he goes, to your Bears and like, dude, guys, is there a better situation for Roshan Johnson right now? Like, there's his competition is Khalil Herbert, who has, while I love Khalil Herbert, dude's been kind of inefficient if you start to kind of dig into his metrics.
Like, so the way that I look at it, behind the obvious top two running backs, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, who went early in round one of the NFL draft, he probably had the best landing spot because he's competing with Khalil Herbert and a guy on a 1-year, $2 million contract. So long term, give me Roshan.
Well, don't forget, we've also got running back Justin Fields, RB1.
Nah, see, I'm not letting you jump into the show calling my boy Justin Fields and sneaking off into the musical intro. Nah, we're going to talk about that.
Oh, you know I'm just giving you shit, John. I love Justin Fields. Yeah, He's probably my second favorite quarterback in the league right now because I have to say that Russell Wilson's my favorite because I'm a Broncos fan and it just makes me feel gross. Yeah, I see that look, Matt. Guys,
I'm sorry.
Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of Dynasty Diehards. You may notice we have a gorgeous, picturesque guest with us today. The one and only Matt Chester from Undroppables and Fighting Chance Fantasy. If you are not following him on Twitter, make sure you look him up at FFMadJester. Matt, thanks for joining us, man. I was actually just on with you on Monday, so you know we're getting a lot of love this week.
There's just so much to talk about. We got a clear time in our schedules. It's busy between. I don't know if y'all are y'all in any rookie drafts right now.
I'm in six.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a smattering going on. I have two leagues where there's been people that are incommunicado that we've been waiting on, and it's like.
But at this point, I'm thankful for those guys because six at once is a lot. And if I can stagger them a little bit, you know, thanks, guys.
Well, my dumbass is doing a startup draft right now.
Oh, no.
In addition. Yes, but let me tell you just real quick before we get into our NFL news and notes. Here's the thing. This was my start. I got Lamar Jackson. And then on the turn, I got Jonathan Taylor. And then in the third round, I got Tua.
Ooh, okay.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Some of the guys in that league might be watching this show. So, guys, it's not that good of a draft. I don't have that good of a team. Please don't leave the league. There's money on the line here. I was real quick to the chat. We got Brad Bolt saying, hey, guys. And he wants to know, is that Jimmy G? Who? I don't know. Maybe it is. Jimmy G in disguise here joining us to talk some Dynasty Fantasy football.
I actually get more Aaron Rodgers growing up.
Oh, I can see that.
Can you see it?
I can see that. When I grow a beard, we were in Boston one year, and this guy was convinced I was Ben Affleck with my beard. Convinced.
You Ben Affleck.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fair. Yeah. All right, guys, let's get into it with some NFL news and notes. So the first thing I want to touch on, I feel like this was the biggest non-draft pick trade of the draft. I mean, there were draft picks involved, but DeAndre Swift is now with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I believe it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to get moved once they took Jahmyr Gibbs way too early in the draft. They could have waited on him and got him later in the first round. They didn't. But now the Eagles may have solved their running back issue, or have they? Are we going to see a consistent DeAndre Swift in Philadelphia? Matt, let's start with you. How do you feel about this trade?
Revitalized after the draft pick. I was scared after Montgomery got picked up there because it seems like they want to give him a little bit of a workload, which still has me worried, and people are completely forgetting about now that drafts are in session. But between him and Gibbs, like I tried to send out a bunch of offers for like 201 for Swift and nobody bit, and good for everybody. You know, I think everybody's a little bit too measured at this point. My evaluation is he's very catch happy on a very not running back pass happy offense, which, you know, between just his explosion could make up for it, but his main feature is going to be dampened by the fact that they have a mobile quarterback that can do the job himself.
Sure, sure. John, are you kind of feeling the same way about this, or do you maybe have a little bit more hope for DeAndre?
Yeah, I mean, the three teams that targeted their quarterback or targeted their running back in the passing game the least last year were the Philadelphia Eagles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Chicago Bears. Why? Because, like Matt said, they have the rushing quarterbacks. They just take it themselves instead of checking it down. So that does concern me a little bit. I will say that he does fill a direct need on that offense, that they do have an elite offensive line, and that they do like to run the ball a lot. So Swift is going to have to operate more as a kind of bell cow running back in order for you to get this top end fantasy production out of him in the Philadelphia offense, which we haven't really seen him show that he can do that with the durability intact throughout his NFL career. So I am a little bit worried that he's either not going to hold up or that it's going to be a real timeshare between him and Penny, because they didn't really give much to get him. It was kind of a dump from Detroit to be like, no, you guys can have him take the salary because we just got Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm trying to remember offhand. I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but didn't they just like swap mid-round picks or something?
I want to say it was
an out of late, out of seven.
Fourth and fifth, something like that?
Yeah. It was like, it wasn't a whole lot of investment that they went out in to take him on. I think it gives them more depth. It gives them more options. But I am kind of worried that it's going to be this rotating backfield between he and Rashad Penny, since they don't really ask their running backs to catch passes.
Well, see, and where my concern comes in here is this. They already had the Lions already had DeAndre Swift, and then they went and they drafted a more expensive DeAndre Swift. So what that tells me is they didn't believe that DeAndre Swift could get the job done. So now they went and invested very high draft capital in Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama. And that tells me that's an issue. And I just don't know. At this point, I'm looking to sell him. What are you guys doing with your shares of DeAndre Swift?
You go ahead first, John. I'm curious.
Yeah, I've dangled it out there, but I'm not willing to sell cheap. Like, I don't want to take a second for it. Like, to me, that's just not enough, especially in this year's draft class. Like, there's a lot of question marks in the second round. There's some good upside of the rookies that you can take in the second round. And like my boy Josh Downs and Marvin Mims are going to be two of my most rostered rookies this year across the board. They're both going in the second round. And I love that. But I think the upside is there that he can be worth a lot more than that. So at this point, I kind of want to hold and see how the Philadelphia offense shakes out before I just cut bait for cheap.
Would you take a one-two swap for him? A first, second like, swap.
Oh, no. I don't. I'm not giving a second and Swift for a first. I think that's too rich for me. I would want. And I think that in rookie drafts, there's a real tier down after like 107 this year in Superflex.
So my thought was I don't exactly know how to assign players characters' values one for one so much, but I feel like something that could get done would be going from the 1-4 to beyond the 1-6 and getting Swift as a pickup on top of it. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think that you could probably do something like that. If a team wants to come up to get a quarterback, they might be willing to give like Swift and a later first in order to get up into the top four picks to take a quarterback this year. So I could see that shaking out. And that'd be something where if I'm already kind of set at quarterback and I have a top four rookie pick, by top four, I mean between 102 and 104, because I'm not giving up Bijan for that. But between 2 and 4, if I'm giving up one of the quarterbacks to move back, yeah, I would take Swift and like 107, 108, something like that.
That's what I'm going to try and do, I think, because that's about where you can make up enough value. And teams that have Swift that got him to build for the future have to be panicking enough right now that they're ready to re-roll on him with something that's got a little bit more insulation than he does. And they don't really quite think that Quentin Johnson is going to help their rebuild alongside Swift as much as just one of the quarterbacks would by himself. Right.
I think that's fair. Okay, guys, so we've got one more bit of news before we get into the draft and how we feel, how we're reacting, how we're feeling about these winners and losers. Randall Cobb signed with the Jets today. So obviously we don't care about this for fantasy, right? But I think we're now – John over here looks like he's just going to have an aneurysm. He's so annoyed I put this on the show sheet. Is Mercedes Lewis next?
Yeah, sure. Sign Eddie Lacy while you're at it. Maybe Jordy Nelson. Let's just get the gang back together, right?
You heard it here guys. John Hellkamp is saying they're going after Jordy Nelson for the Green Bay Jets. This is just such a weird situation. I've never seen a team where they bring in a quarterback and then they're like, we'll give you whatever you want. But then if you've seen the
well, hold on. They did, hold on. Brady won a Super Bowl because they did that. Don't forget, 2 years ago, Brady went down to Tampa Bay and Bruce Arians was like, you know what? I'm going to try and coach, but really you can do kind of whatever you want. And even that was too much for Brady. And Brady won a Super Bowl because he got whatever he wanted. And, you know,
fair point. Worked.
They moved on. We don't know what's going to happen now, but there is a formula that there is a precedence for this, even within the last 2 years.
Sure. And yes, but that was Tom Brady, the greatest of all time.
Well, Aaron Rodgers has a lot to say about that from his ayahuasca teepee, okay?
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he has a lot to say about a lot of things. This is just such a weird situation. But if you've seen the video that the Jets have been circulating of their season ticket sales office and how rapidly they're selling season tickets, yeah, dude, if I'm Woody Johnson, I'm going to give him everything he wants because all of a sudden you're selling out your season tickets when you haven't been able to for years because you've put this shit product on the field. And, you know, honestly, Aaron Rodgers looks happy. It's such a weird thing. The dude is smiling more than we've seen him smile in years. And I just like it when people are happy. I just want everyone to be happy. That's all, you know?
You're such a softie.
I am. All right, enough of this NFL news.
Do you remember the Brady boat parade? That was the first time I've ever enjoyed Brady's happiness.
Right.
I will say, though, like, Brady got way more likable the second he left New England.
Yes, he did.
Oh, like, dude, going down to Tampa and the boat parade and seeing him, like, trashed.
Drunkenly and, like, tossing the Super Bowl trophy from to his best friend forever, Gronk. Yeah. I like him now. And I'm a Saints fan, and I have to like him now.
Right. I think if you put another like 2 inches on your hair, it would look exactly like Tom Brady's. Just a big old like crazy coif, dry coif
underwear commercials and be officially like go full retired Brady.
Yeah.
Dude, I love it. All right, guys, let's get into this NFL draft, man. I want to first start talking about the biggest draft winners. I've got some names written down here and I want to see what you guys think of it. Okay. So number one for me, and this might be a little bit controversial, but Maddie, you and I just talked about this on Monday, Zay Flowers. The dude is stepping into the Todd Monken offense, and I am excited. And I've gotten some pushback on this.
Everywhere. I'm taking him late first, like all over the place today.
I took him at 108 today. I didn't even care.
I've been taking him between 108 and 111, like, all over the board. Yeah, I'm glad that you guys talked about this a couple days ago, and now I can come in with us not having talked about it and just tell you that I'm also ridiculously excited because Todd Monken's offense, when he's been in the NFL and in the college ranks, is so ridiculously pass happy. You just gave Lamar the bag. He's going to want to throw more and run less. They are going to install this Todd Monken offense that's going to be so pass happy. I think that this is just ridiculous. Defenses are going to have to account for OBJ to a degree. Like, obviously, he's not prime OBJ anymore, but he's still there. And I love OBJ, the player type. I'm not talking about his character, but OBJ, the player type as a mentor for Zay Flowers, someone that can just route up defenders and get open and sit down in zone and run these great crossers and stuff like that. Like, that's Zay Flowers' bread and butter. So he's going to be able to learn from OBJ, who is elite at that in his prime. I love it, man. I think that Zay is going to get a ton of targets in this offense. I think that he's going to absolutely eat in PPR. He's a contested catch monster down the field. Like, dude, just sign me all the way up. Like, to me, he's wide receiver three in this class.
What do you think a ton of targets means in the new Todd Monken Baltimore offense?
I want to go back and look at the Todd Monken like target distributions when he was running like the Tampa Bay offense with Jameis Winston when he was just airing it out all over the field. But like Todd Monken's offense throws a lot. I know they target their tight ends a lot, which is great news for Mark Andrews. Like
Isaiah Likely.
and Isaiah Likely, who might get on the field in some like ancillary packages and stuff like that. Yeah. So the tight ends are going to feast in this offense, but Zay Flowers, it's tough to project what a rookie is going to do in terms of like how much rapport he's going to earn and how much targets he's going to earn right away from his quarterback. But if you're telling me that this is a guy that can average 8 targets a game by the end of the season, like that wouldn't surprise me. I think that that's a pretty healthy number and pretty doable for him in this offense.
That's 126.
Yeah, which would be healthy, right? I don't know if he starts right away getting that, but like, I think that's the pace he's going to get on by like halfway through the season.
Cool. I think he's at least 100 target guy.
Yeah,
this offense. So if you look at the competition for targets, like realistically, maybe J.K. Dobbins gets a few, but again, we've got the rushing quarterback who's not going to throw much to Dobbins. And then you've got Mark Andrews, who we know he's a stud. Then you've got OBJ, Nelson Agholor, and Rashad Bateman. I would love that. But I think what we're looking at in this offense, it's going to be Bateman and Flowers as the 1-2 as far as wide receivers go. If they're running 3 receiver sets a lot, which I kind of think they might. So you've got Bateman, Flowers, and either Agholor or OBJ on the field. And those guys are more drawing coverage away from Flowers and from Bateman. So yeah. I'm really excited about Zay Flowers. Now here's another one I'm excited about. And I didn't know how excited I was about it, but Anthony Richardson in Indy, because word is he's going to be the starter out of the gate. This team trusts him. And his head coach is Shane Steichen. And Shane Steichen is good with these kinds of quarterbacks. I mean, look at Jalen Hurts. Look at the progression of Jalen Hurts from where he was his rookie season to where he was last season. The dude was second in MVP voting. Now, I'm not saying Richardson's going to be second in MVP voting next season, but I think this guy has a legitimate shot to be a high-end QB2 in his rookie season in Superflex. Now, okay, Matt, am I crazy?
No, I think there's a wide valley of risk and reward. Like I don't know about y'all, but I would give 2 Bijans for a Jalen Hurts, right?
Yeah.
But the risk pushes, you know, we're not going to say coin flip. We're just going to say nice situation, coin flip, possible ceiling comparable Jalen Hurts. I think I've done 5 drafts so far, and I have 2 Anthony Richardson and no other quarterbacks. And that's very, very, very scary.
Sure.
We'll see how it goes.
But
it's either going to be a flop or a great, right?
What yeah, exactly. And at this point, we see fantasy managers, dynasty managers in their rookie drafts. They're taking the chance on him because he's not – if you're past the 4th pick, you're not getting him.
He's been the first quarterback off the board.
I haven't seen him go 1-3 once. He's never gone 1-3.
Nope. It's insane to me. Like it's for a guy that had 13 starts. Like it's just unbelievable. The ascension. I mean, I remember talking about him this last fall, cause I'm a really big college football guy, and going into the season, I was like, yeah, I'm really excited about this kid. I'm excited to see like what he can do. He's really toolsy. We know he's got the athleticism, stuff like that. Made some great plays, had some real down weeks, some real up weeks, like was really inconsistent. And then all of a sudden the combine happens and now he's the next Jalen Hurts. And it's a huge ask for him to become that. I agree with what you're saying though. You're either hitting a home run or you're striking out. It's true 2 outcomes with Anthony Richardson because I don't think there's a middle ground. Now these athletic quarterbacks, the rushing quarterbacks, when they come in, they have the opportunity to give you fantasy production, like a floor with their rushing ability before the passing game kind of catches up. So he might be able to do that in his rookie year and kind of help you right away, you know, give you some production. Asking him to come in and be like a dominant quarterback as a rookie, though, I don't see it. I think he's going to take a lot of time to adjust to reading NFL coverages. That, and you're also talking about an Indianapolis offense that has not had a rushing quarterback. So if Steichen is coming in and he's going to install that type of offense, it's a complete change in philosophy for this offense, for the offense alignment, for the roles of everyone on the team. That's not what they've been doing because they've just been sitting back there with pocket passers for the last few years, at least. So now it's a massive philosophy change. If you're going to come in and be like, okay, cool. Well, we're doing design runs to the quarterback, like Baltimore, like Philly. It's a big change. So I think there's going to be a curve. I don't think you should expect him to come in and give you a ton of fantasy production as a rookie. The upside is there for like a year two jump, I think. But again, you're asking a guy with only 13 games of experience to come in and learn how to read NFL defenses and go through his progressions really, really quickly. I think there's going to be a learning curve. I'm worried. Like, I still would prefer CJ Stroud over Anthony Richardson in fantasy. Like, that's just the way that I have it. I
hear what you're saying, John, but he's got a really good offensive line. If they can stay healthy, he's got Michael Pittman and he's got Jonathan Taylor. And I think that's the biggest one for me. And Alec Pierce, let's not forget.
And Josh Downs.
And Josh Downs.
And they've got Josh Downs.
And so. Chig. Wait.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. That's Tennessee.
Yeah, it's the other blue. The other blue team.
I think this might have been the best situation for him to land in, given the range where we knew he was going to go, because he does. He has weapons. And the thing that really tips the needle for me is Shane Steichen.
Let me stop you there, because he would have been way more fun with Arthur Smith in Baltimore. That would if be a really fun trade, spot for Anthony Richardson.
Like if they're trading Lamar Jackson to Indy and come up to one. Like,
you're saying Arthur Smith. You're talking about Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah, Atlanta would be.
Oh, really, Atlanta! Really fun. I for some reason read Baltimore.
That could have been fun.
So anyway, let's talk about that. That's a he's at least insulated because he was the number four pick in the NFL draft. Anthony Richardson was.
Yeah.
Ridder doesn't have the security or the upside, but he's got the offense in place more than Indy does, and we'll see. You're worried about a coach about a stylistic offensive change in Indy.
Yeah.
But you have to think that they must have that in mind to have made this move. And if you're going to be okay with Zay Flowers because of an expected coaching change, offense philosophy, sure, it's okay to bring that theory, the philosophy to other, you know, that theory to other teams as well.
Yeah. All right. I hear what you're saying. And I do like it, but I think what you're asking a team to rely on your quarterback to pass more, like what we're talking about with Baltimore, with them getting Todd Monken, I feel like that's a bit of a easier philosophy change than asking your offense alignman to shift into design runs for the quarterback. So that's, I feel true, like it's a little bit of a different situation, but I hear what you're saying. I think that Anthony Richardson has all the ceiling in the world. Don't get me wrong, but I just want to caution fantasy managers that it might take time. Like, don't
it's a expect blaring, him. Blaring caution sign when you take Anthony Richardson.
Like, you
really, you need to know that he may not be anything ever. You need to know that he probably won't be anything first half of this year. You gotta be secure enough to sit down, like buckle up and get ready for the ride, or be secure enough with losing and know that you're going to be okay with. You know what I mean? Like, you can't depend on him. He's the Kyle Pitts of quarterbacks.
Yes,
yeah,
that's a really good way to put it. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Kyle Pitts, thank you for handing me that transition, Matt.
Oh,
because I want to talk about three rookie tight ends that I think were big winners here. But I want to know who you guys think was the biggest winner. Dalton Kincaid goes to Buffalo. Luke Musgrave goes to Green Bay. And then you've got Sam Laporta going to the Detroit Lions. For me, it's going to be Kincaid, then Laporta, then Musgrave. That's how I would rank these guys in their landing spots. Let's start with you, John. Where would you rank these guys? Where do you rank them in their landing spots?
I really wish that I could be contrarian, but I have it the same way, because I think that they're going to split Kincaid out into a lot of slot.
Yes.
You know, like, not in line. He's not a blocking tight end. You're drafting him to be a receiver.
He's a terrible blocking tight end.
He's not good.
FF grade in college was atrocious.
Yeah, but he's great hands, great body control in the air. His target radius is 10 feet. Like, it's gigantic. You just put it anywhere in the vicinity and he's going to make a play on it. He's a mismatch. He's super athletic. You have Stephon Diggs. You have Gabe Davis, who was everyone's favorite breakout candidate last year that didn't pan out. And then you have Dalton Kincaid, who's going to be able to line up and operate
yep.
in a really interesting place in the field where he should see a lot of open looks. So I think Kincaid is going to ball out. I love Sam Laporta too. I love the Iowa tight end factory. I think he's a really interesting fit in Detroit for what they're trying to do. And they also need pass catchers, especially with J-Mo getting suspended like an idiot.
Yep.
And then Luke Musgrave for me is way down the list because they also drafted Tucker Kraft in the third. I don't know what Green Bay was doing double dipping at tight end in the second and third round, because now you have two guys that are just going to cannibalize.
They got a wide receiver in the second round too. So that might help paint the whole picture that they took three pass catchers in the first, in rounds two and between rounds two and three.
Well, guys, they just lost Randall Cobb.
They've been preparing for this since the draft.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
There you go. Yeah. It's just that one to me is weird. Luke Musgrave. I don't know. I think that that's going to be an interesting situation with the two tight ends there. You've got a slew of young wide receivers. I mean, think about it. You have five pass catchers on this team that are going to be in their second or rookie season based on what they drafted last year as well. So you have so much youth across the board. How this target distribution shakes out with a quarterback who's just coming into starting.
Also
open to me. Like, I
basically
have no idea
in his second year, right? He's also basically a rookie.
Yeah. Like, this is going to be an experiment. I don't know who he wants to target. We have no history on what it's going to look like. So,
right.
I don't know. I'm not jumping the gun for Luke Musgrave and rookie drafts.
Okay. Fair enough. Matt, where are you at on these guys?
I am so in love with Sam Laporta. He is such a nice discount Kincaid. Kincaid is going, I think in all five drafts that I've done, he's gone exactly 111, which is interesting. Like, that's cool. That's some nice security. And in most of the drafts that I've done, Superflex rookie 12-man leagues with 0.5 tight end premiums, 110. Oh, no! Oh,
but that's where he's going, right? He's a late first in every league. I haven't seen him slip to the second.
And then I see Michael Meyer go right at 2-4 pretty much every single league. And Laporta, I've seen go as late as 3-2. And if we're going to arbitrage those three guys, definitely give me the guy that I can, trade back from 111 to 208 for a 24 first. And I'll take Laporta over Kincaid every single time. If I can get an extra second to go from one to the other, you can. That's the arbitrage range that you can do. But I like everything that you said about Luke Musgrave and Tucker. They took Tucker Kraft just one round behind him. I think it was 11th pick in the second round for
315 for Tucker Kraft.
315 for Tucker Kraft. So we don't know which way it's going to go. There was the year that Baltimore drafted Hurst and then drafted Mark Andrews, and like we see which one ended up well. And
you should kind of
shift your expectations in that kind of way. And we don't know, like, I'm not taking a risk on any of those guys. And I love that people are going really heavy on Kincaid. So I don't have to, because he is a big body guy. They do have Diggs, who has a wide spread to catch the ball. You've got Gabe, who's big bodied. They've got Dawson Knox, who's big bodied. They've got the Russian quarterback, who's big bodied. So they're repeating the same, and then I think they drafted somebody in the third or fourth that's also a big-bodied wide receiver, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Justin Shorter in the fifth.
Okay, so they've got a bunch of massive dudes, and they've got a bunch of Khalil Shahirs, who they're replacing the old Beasley, and getting. They had McKenzie last year, who transitioned to Shakir this year. Like, they've got their roles, and they're just spreading the big boy role around so many different pass catchers. I don't want Kincaid that late. Or that early, I'm happy to get Laporta, who is competing with not Jameson Williams to start the season and wouldn't be fighting for targets with that tiny, incredibly fast dude anyway. He's not going to be fighting Amon-Ra St. He might be fighting Amon-Ra St. Brown across the middle. Laporta might be for targets.
Maybe
if that's the competition, there's not many places for it to go around too. Like, there's right. Jameson, there's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Who else is there up there besides now Sam Laporta? There's not another. Brock Wright doesn't catch anything. Who's the other guy?
Wasn't it Yeah. Wasn't it Jared Goff that gave Tyler Higbee his best season?
That's right. Yes, it was a six-game stretch, and he was the tight end one for six games. Yeah. It was like record-breaking. So that's a great point, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we've got a question in the chat I want to bring up here from friend of the show, Richard Sickles, who I told you one of the guys for my startup is going to pop in here.
Dick Sickles.
Yes, that's right. He's trying to get away from that, guys. He's being more adult. He's Richard.
Oh, he's mature now.
He is. He wants to know what our thoughts are on Meyer landing in Las Vegas.
I just want to point out the fact that Matt's going to be targeting him in Las Vegas there as the quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. Jimmy G, though, tight end friendly. It's a great landing spot, in my opinion.
It really is.
For Mike Mayer. We just talked about those other guys. We didn't bring up Mike Mayer. But to me, he and Laporta going back-to-back in the second round was fascinating, by the way. Sure. 34th and 35th pick. That's a really tough difference. Like choosing between those two to me is really difficult because Sam Laporta is really, really talented and very polished. And so is Michael Mayer. He's a great blocker as well. He's your do everything tight end, kind of like your George Kittle, right? Like he can get dirty in the blocking game, and he can also be a really friendly pass catching threat. So I think for a team that doesn't have a lot of weapons outside of Davante Adams, I think that Mayer got himself a good landing spot as well.
Okay, so guys, let's move on to the biggest draft losers. This is a little bit shorter of a list because there are only so many guys you have expectations for. The first one I'm going to bring up, and I'm just going to lay out my case for this to start and see what you guys think, Devin Achane. I mean, for fantasy, they've already got Jeff Wilson, they've got Raheem Mostert, and now you're bringing in Achane. I don't think I'm really excited about trying to get him in a rookie draft at this point. It's going to be a three-headed monster. Mike McDaniel runs the Shanahan system. We see what that Shanahan system is. You don't have Christian McCaffrey as your running back. I just don't think there's any value to him. He's a guy I'm not touching in rookie drafts. I'm just not touching it. Unless we're talking like you've got the last pick of the fifth round in a rookie draft. And there are some that go five rounds. I have a couple that are going five rounds. Then maybe I'll consider it because, honestly, he's just going to sit on my taxi squad for 2 years until I drop him.
My brother in Christ, I have not seen him hit the second round in any draft that I've done so far.
I got him. He just went 201.
There you go. You keep on messing me up, man. It's like, there goes Kincaid, one pick early. Everything negated. Thanks, John.
And then Shane, one pick later. Yep, I got you.
I just can't subscribe to this. I'm not saying that he's not a talented running back, but landing spot matters. And Matt, I think you and I talked about this with Matt Ward a little bit on Monday. Landing spots are important. Draft capital is important.
There's a lot of arbitrage to be done around Devin Achane because a lot of people believe in him. And this is that believing in players that were all in a tier or maybe even at the beginning of a tier or at the end of a tier pre-draft process, when they get all mixed up for what seems like a lot of silly reasons, the best thing you can do is take advantage of all those silly reasons and not follow into them. So we talked about a trade that I did the other day when I was on the clock at 111 and I was looking at Achane, Kendre Miller, and I think Zach Charbonnet, who are basically the three guys that are going in that tier right after Gibbs and Bijan, of course. So in those three tier guys, for some reason, Charbonnet kind of got pushed to the back of the line. And I'm not sure why. Maybe it was him getting drafted around ahead of Achane and Kendre Miller. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was him getting drafted to a team that's going to do more running with only two running backs instead of less running with three running backs like Kendre Miller in New Orleans and Devin Achane in Miami. It doesn't make sense to me what this big craze about Achane is because historically, I think if you want to have a sub 190 pound running back who gets you an RB1 season or even an RB, even an RB2 season, you have to go all the way back to who was the main guy that did it? LaDainian Tomlinson. It's been like 15 years for there to be a consistently good player this big. So it doesn't make sense to give such an important pick that you can do different things with towards this tiny little dude. It doesn't make sense to me, especially when on the clock the other day, we talked about this, Nate. I traded the 111 for Derrick Henry and 2/3. Yep. Somebody got really excited about A-Chain and they wanted to change their team around and like, oh, well, next year, you know, Raheem Mostert will be gone. He'll be 33. And Jeff Wilson, who's that? Blah, 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 blah. But if you can trade A-Chain, like an unknown quantity of that three-headed backfield, which is going to stay a three-headed backfield because it's a Mike McDaniel's a Shanahan disciple. And right. So he's going to keep churning through the guys that he brought with him from San Francisco when he was running the Shanahan offense with two running backs rotating. And now he brought those same two guys, and now he's drafting a third guy. I have no faith in this one guy being any kind of bell cow or setting himself apart from the other two guys in that backfield. So why wouldn't I trade one of those three guys for Derrick Henry and two-thirds who the Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert managers will be happy to send those guys for a future third. So you can get two-thirds of that backfield just for the change that they send you on top of an actually good running back. You know, I don't care who you pick. If you want to pick like Miles Sanders has a pretty undisputed running back room. Like you just arbitrage the Ashane pick and get two-thirds and go buy the other two-thirds of Ashane's off backfield. That's my
thing. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite tweets that I sent out like 3 years ago, I think it was that I don't care who the 49ers running back is because Shanahan doesn't care who the 49ers running back is.
Boom,
and
that's
I pull that up like all the time and retweet it when we go through these cycles where it's like, oh, who's the starting running back this week? It's the same thing.
Yes.
That's the Shanahan offense, and they're doing the same thing in Miami.
So, veteran best ball. Do you really want to take a first round pick on a veteran best ball guy? Like what you're hoping for is James Cook, but better. And for him to emerge, even though they already have two of them.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you drafted a third piece of an interchangeable running back set because all of them are similar. They're really, really fast. They're small. And they're just going to rotate in so that none of them have to take the beating of a 250-touch running back.
Exactly. Love it. So you mentioned a name. This is another one of my losers, and you guys might disagree with me here, but I think Zach Charbonnet was a big loser in this draft.
Dude, I hated it. I know that Matt just said like he went to Seattle and they're going to run more with only two running backs. Like, I get it, but for what people wanted Sharps to be, which is come in and be this bell cow and take over a backfield because he has the build and the three-down skill set to be able to do that, I was pissed. Yeah, Seattle killed it on their first two picks, and we actually, when we were doing our mock draft, I was leaning really heavy on Seattle taking a corner with their first pick at five. I was like, I really think that Pete wants to go back to the early 2010s Legion of Boom and get themselves a corner. I thought they'd go Gonzalez instead of Witherspoon, but regardless, they took Witherspoon and I went, yeah, okay, that fits what I was thinking that they wanted to do.
Right.
And then they get down to their pick and I'm watching JSN just like fall into their laps. And I'm like, oh God, he's going to do it, isn't he? And they did. They get Jaxon Smith-Njigba, which we can talk about that a little bit more in depth also.
They get an A plus
for the first round in terms of what they did for their football team. And then they use the pick on Zach Charbonnet mid-second, 2.21. The only running back to go in the second round, by the way. And I'm just going
– Notable.
But it's like you have Kenneth Walker. What are you doing? If you're looking for an interchangeable piece with Kenneth Walker, why not take a fourth round running back? Why are you taking Zach Charbonnet, who's a bell cow type back? I was just like, my brain just exploded that they did this to their football team.
I don't understand. And I know that they have a role for him. Like Pete Carroll has a plan for Charbonnet, right? Same with JSN, which that was a little bit confusing, but I get that one a little bit more because Tyler Lockett's getting up there in age. He's not as young as he used to be. It's crazy how that happens. And he's going to be a great pairing with DK Metcalf. That pick I got. But Charbonnet, you don't need two bell cow backs. So either
Matt
this
is
was
like literally champing at the bit.
Right yeah, now. Let's go, like, Matt.
Let me talk.
I'm just loving it, man. I want to hear all the perspectives.
Let's hear yours, Matt. Throw it out there, buddy.
Okay. Pete Carroll's an old head. He's an old head coach. He's an old school coach. He's going to be the guy who, you know, it is notable that he's the only one who drafted a running back.
Hey, Nate, you turned off your camera, not your microphone.
I know. Huh.
Go ahead, Matt.
He's an old school coach. He's an old head coach. who wants to use running backs more like bell cows. And the rest of the league is gonna get away from that to the point of almost, are they all going to rotate through three? Is it going to be like one really good running back and then like a couple of comparable guys? Or like, what is the process going to be? But I do know one thing, and that is in Seattle, they are going to want to do old head stuff. And the running back there always makes pretty decent points. There's between Kendre Miller, Achane, and Charbonnet, only one of those guys is going to get 85% of the carries through one injury. Only one of those guys will. And that's all we're really hoping for in the running back position these days, is for a coach to feel comfortable with a running back, comfortable enough for him to be there on the first two downs and be able to do his job and put the ball through between the tackles and get 4 yards if they need to, maybe turn it into 10, but not get zero. That's what Pete Carroll wants. And of course they want to be able to go to the outside too, but because he's such a well-rounded running back, I think it's a great fit for him in that offense, because that offense is going to want running backs who just do their old school jobs and continue doing their old school jobs. And they've never leaned into a pure pass catcher. It's always been him just taking his guy and being like, you know what, Chris Carson, like he was a sixth rounder or something, but they're just going to run him to the ground. Seven. Great. Sure. Pete Carroll's going to do Pete Carroll. And I'm okay jumping on board with that, especially because you talked about bad running back or just bad landing spots, right? And this was supposed to be a really nice, really good running back class with a lot of depth. But about half of these top 12-ish guys, none of them got good spots except for Bijan. He's the only one. Even Gibbs didn't get a good spot. Right. But as we watch the league change and as we watch these 2017 running backs turn over, these guys who are landing behind Mixon, like Chase Brown, these guys who are landing behind Etienne's too young, so he's not going to go away, but that's a two-man backfield. Charbonnet's in a two-man... What's that?
Yeah, Tank Bigsby going to Jacksonville.
Tank Bigsby's in a two-man backfield. Mm-hmm. Etienne is worth way more than a first. Are we sure that the NFL is going to prioritize one running back per backfield, or are they going to kind of like split the workload? And then I'm always going to want to do arbitrage on the running back. So if you have ETN and you're like, well, he's going to cost two first, and then you get in Charbonnet at like 201, why would I spend four times as much for ETN when this seems like the year, what we've been talking about for years is this running back class and its depth and how we're going to be able to like, it's gonna re-flourish the league because running back lifetimes are cyclical, and as a whole bunch of them leave, the 2017 guys came in, and like as those guys are aging out, they're 28 years old. We always knew that the landscape was going to change completely, and then we look at it and we look at we look at it changing and we forget what we had been talking about this entire time, where over the last few years, running back is the most situational dependent out of all the other positions. That's why zero running back worked, is because if you can start five wide receivers and then just cycle through and they're really good wide receivers, you can make two out of like seven running backs work. If you just get a bunch of handcuffs or get a bunch of, you know, Madison's, they'll give you three games a year, whatever. You know, you can always buy Deion Jackson for a fourth for two games and he'll give you 15 points a game. So that's always been kind of the game. And we've always, you know, as a dynasty community, we say that's the way to go. That's the way you build a team, is you just do zero running back and you build on all the other positions. And then when you're ready, like you can still kind of cycle through the handcuffs and do as you do, but then you can start to afford the good running backs. When is the NFL going to learn? When are they going to learn that the way to get good production is to not care about your running back and just put them in a system where anybody could just do really well? And then I feel like this year the NFL did learn, and that's why Zach Evans went in the sixth round, despite being somebody that we thought was going to go in, like, is this guy going to go in the second round? We don't know, but we love
him. He got his ass replaced by a true freshman at Ole Miss, Quinshon.
True, but the Devy RB one true freshman.
Be fair. Oh yeah.
So TCU, okay, okay, Mr. Roschon Johnson has all this clout. However, he didn't play because he got replaced by a freshman, right? So, like, pick a lane, my dude. Is it Roschon Johnson season?
Darts off. Let's
go. Okay, I just want to fire through a couple more players here on the Biggest Losers. Then we are going to get to Roschon Johnson here before we close out the show. Israel Abanaconda lands in New York. I mean,
Abanaconda don't want Mona unless you.
I just hate this landing spot for him. He's so talented, but I don't see a path to him being fantasy relevant unless Breece Hall gets hurt again.
Yeah, Michael Carter's dead. That's what
I can't get a fourth round pick for Michael Carter at this point. Wow. It's so frustrating. And then you've got Darnell Washington.
In which case, you might as well just hold him, by the way.
Exactly, which is what I'm doing at this point because I can't move him. Then Darnell Washington. I want to touch on this real quick. There were so many analysts that were so high on this guy heading into this draft. Like, yeah. I heard people saying he could be the first tight end off the board.
Yep.
Then he went to Pittsburgh as a late round pick. Is there any reason to have him rostered on your dynasty teams at all? The dude's sitting behind Pat Freiermuth. He's not going to steal work from Patty Muth.
I took my first Darnell Washington in a draft today because my only two tight ends are Pitts and Freiermuth. So when Darnell Washington was there at 4-8, yes, I took him, but I won't take him in any other situation.
That's a good point. As a handcuff to Muth, I get that.
Oh, John, what about in the late fourth? Yeah.
A tight end handcuff is like the most hilarious thing I've ever
heard. Yeah, right?
Sure. It's amazing. So Darnell Washington, what's interesting about that is first and foremost, he went at 330. So he went late third round. So he's still like draft cap's fine. He slid because teams apparently were concerned about his medicals. That was like the only reason that he started to slide during the draft. So I'm not sure exactly how that's going to impact him long term, but you're talking about like an alien of a tight end. Like, he is just ridiculous in terms of the size and the speed and the athleticism that he
brings
to it. His combine measurements were 6'6 and 5'8, 264. It's funny because I feel like everyone thinks that he's like 6'8. Like, he's not this like
J-Lonnie absolute size.
Yeah, like, he's not 6'8", but he's still really big, really fast. They showed the clip of him hurdling an Oregon DB like 50,000 times during the draft.
During the combine, they showed him moving that tackle dummy sled, and he looked like – I watched it, and I was like, I don't really understand why this keeps getting so many views over and over. And then I watched another tight end doing it. I was like, oh, because it's actually it's job, really
hard.
But he made it look like he was just like, you know, putting on his shoes and going to the car the way that he handled that thing. So
yeah,
by comparison, he's a freak.
He's ridiculous. But I think for Pittsburgh to use a third round pick on him, this is why we talk about draft capital, because if you're spending good draft capital on a player, you have to have a plan for it, right? Like, he's got to have some sort of plan in this offense. I don't know if they're going to come out and start running a lot of two tight end sets and that he's going to get on the field a lot. I mean, you look at they didn't address wide receiver in the draft. So,
well, they signed Allen Robinson. So don't forget about that. I know it's nothing, but you got to think it's going to be Kenny Pickett who's going to be throwing to all these dudes.
Right.
So many dudes.
Yeah. So I think it's just tough because I mean, Muth, so many dudes. Muth is ridiculous, especially in the red zone.
But I think
that if they're going to use Darnell Washington, I think that he's going to be more of a middle of the field kind of guy. I think they're going to try to get creative and get this really, really athletic tight end into space. Start running some two tight end sets. So I don't know. I think he's worth it. He's definitely going late in rookie drafts. I mean, he's available in a lot of third rounds. Matt, the fact that you said you think you got him in the fourth.
I've never seen him go in the second. Like, I've never seen him go mid third even.
I think mid to late third is where I've seen him go in a few, but that's
Nate, he's going to pull up his phone. He's going to be like, look, 305. Gotcha.
Yeah. Right.
Gotcha.
let me find it. I've got multiple drafts going right now.
You said
mid. No. So it's, you said mid, he's two picks before the middle of the round, actually. But yeah, so I think that it's interesting. I'm willing to take a shot on the traits, right? Because like you said, with the Baltimore situation, that was, they drafted the two running backs in the same draft class, but you never know who's going to emerge on a depth chart. So third round, tight end is one of those positions to me where I like taking late round flyers on tight ends because it almost never works. But if it doesn't, you get that gem that can give you a positional advantage over your opponent in fantasy. It's just gold to me. So I'm willing to take, you know, a late round tight end that has good athleticism and hope that he can turn into something in dynasty, or he just gets enough hype where I can turn someone that I used a late third round pick on into an early second. Cool. Call it a day. Yeah. And then invest in a better wide receiver with that pick next year.
Hey, league mate, would you like to buy Freiermuth for, you know, for a first? I know you're heading into the playoffs. No, I don't want to do that. Okay. I'll throw in Darnell Washington too. Okay. I'll do that. Like, that's where I see his value. But let me ask you this, John, would you value Darnell Washington differently in different scoring formats? Because he's a seam stretcher, I kind of want to stay away from him in tight end premium leagues because he's not going to be capitalizing on what makes tight end premium special, which is more catches. He's just going to be very capable.
Yeah, he's not a value play, in my opinion, at least not right now. I think there's no way to project that that's his role. It could happen. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe they, for some odd reason, something happens to Muth and he's not producing well and they end up not picking up his option in a couple of years. Like, you know, you never know what's going to happen down the road. But I think to start with, he's definitely not someone in tight end premium that I'm like super invested in. Like Sam Laporta, I think can get targets.
Dalton Kincaid,
I think can get targets. Darnell Washington, I don't see him getting a lot of targets. You're hoping that this is someone that they end up deploying in ways where he's able to get into the end zone. I mean, he's going to be one of those tight ends, I think, where you don't have one of the elite tight ends. So you're hoping that your tight end gives you a touchdown this week. And that's kind of what you're looking at.
So yeah,
I guess Dawson Knox.
Yeah.
Basically, guy doesn't score a touchdown. He's worthless on your roster.
Two catches for 12 yards.
Mm-hmm. And a touchdown.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So I just want to get to a couple things here before we get everyone out here. Just two rapid fire questions. So Matt, I want you to take this one first. Stetson Bennett to the Rams. Does this mean anything now that he gets to sit for a year or two behind his fellow former Georgia quarterback, Matthew Stafford, or is this just nothing? Is he going to be a glorified backup for most of his career?
Well, let me answer that with a couple of questions.
Oh, I love this.
No, he's not going to be important. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
No, that's it. That was it. I don't have any questions.
Okay, John.
Sorry.
Yeah, not interested. Okay. I don't see it.
I can't believe, I don't know why they're not selling out on Cooper Kupp. I don't know what they're trying to do this year. They probably should just cash out on whatever they can because it seems like their plan is to get Caleb Williams next year. Like that's what it seems like would be the best plan of action, but they're not preparing for the next generation at all. And they're not trying to go for it now. So I don't know what they're doing.
If they don't want to face Caleb Williams twice a year, they got to somehow lose every single game because Arizona's in the front running right now.
Dude, that's going to be fun.
Either their own pick or Houston's, one of the two, they've got a really good shot at taking Caleb Williams and trading Kyler Murray out to the AFC.
You're right.
God, they really need to do that. I agree. Okay, last one. John, I already know your answer to this one, but I'm going to let you say it anyway. When does Roschon Johnson take over the Chicago Bears backfield? What week are we talking here?
Week 10.
Week 10. Matt, when do you think he takes over the backfield?
I don't.
Matt rolled his eyes harder than I've ever seen.
I know. I saw it.
Don't. Come on, guys. Like, how many rushing plays are they going to have every week? How many of them are going to go to Justin Fields? How many of them are going to go to you guys forgot about Dante Foreman? Like, oh, Roschon's
going to take it.
Well, they didn't either. So Roschon's not going to like automatically going to take over just because he's younger. No. We play dynasty guys, but they don't. They like pass blockers. The NFL likes guys they can depend on. And Deontay Foreman's been a true reliable guy since he regrew his Achilles. He was reliable all last year in North Carolina, and I think that they're okay. How about this? I was so excited about Jamar Jefferson backing up Swift because I thought he was going to be the number two and Swift always gets injured. Jamal Williams is like, enjoy Deontay Foreman, dude. Enjoy fighting with it because it's happening again. Jamal Williams is happening with Deontay Foreman. I'm sorry.
I will tell you right now that my week 10 comment is mostly out of bear down optimism, but I think that looking at the situation, they seem to really like this guy. And I know that every team's going to say that about every player that they draft, right? You're never going to come out and answer questions and be like, I don't know, he was kind of there, so we took him. Like, you're always going to rave about every player that you draft. And I
coach speak. It's coach speak.
Coach speak. It is.
Sure.
But Roshan, to me, is an incredibly talented running back. His broken tackle metrics in college were great. His ability to catch at his size is great. And I know that we're talking about a Chicago offense that doesn't target their running backs a lot. So you're not asking him to be this great pass catching running back. I get that. But his competition, the aforementioned running back that you're talking about, the 27-year-old on his fourth team on a 1-year contract worth $2 million. Like, he's not a franchise back that Roshan is contending with. So do I think that Roshan in dynasty is a worthwhile investment? Yeah, I think so. You're the one, dude, you've been saying this entire show how you just want a running back that's a part of the puzzle all over the NFL and that no one is a bell cow back anymore. That was like literally your argument 10 minutes ago.
Completely.
And now that I'm telling you that there's a running back who's going to be a part of the puzzle, who's big and physical and might be the goal line opportunist in that later half of the season. And you'll be like, oh, no, have fun with him. Like, dude, I'm with you on that.
I'm with you on that. I think he can completely fill out the role that you're talking about. I do. And as much as the bell cows are going away, I do think that he could end up being one of the, you know, I think he could be an over 50% type of running back in that room, which is all we're really looking for, especially as this younger generation is taking over and we're forgetting that it's going to take over the older generation as they fall out. You're right. I should pick a lane and we're hoping that Deontay Foreman kind of falls into the last generation, but we also have to recognize our homerisms and, I respected that you started with that for sure.
I'm totally a homer. So
thanks, John. You've been so mean to me. He's never coming back. On that note, guys, John, as always, thanks for hanging out with me every Wednesday. Guys, we will be back next Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. You guys, you can find his work with the Undroppables, with Fighting Chance Fantasy. Find him on Twitter at FFMadJester. Find John at John Helmkamp. You can find me at Nate Paulo and find us at FF Dino Diehards. Guys, until next week. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I could do this all night, cause I do what I like.